We all have this sense of like we're this smallness in our little corner of the universe and how we push back the darkness. I think the secret sauce of salvation history is the most boring part of the Bible. It's the genealogies.
Yeah.
Who are these nameless small people, right?
Right.
But if it weren't for that great grandpa of St. Joseph, Joseph would not have been St.
Right.
Joseph.
Right.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, and welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast at the Augustine Institute. I'm your host, Joseph Pierce. And I have a very exciting guest with me today, one who really does need no introduction, although that won't stop us from introducing him, because his ministry has an outreach to tens of thousands, indeed, via social media and radio to millions. So my guest today is Christopher Stefanik, a real-life Catholic. He's done work for the Augustine Institute and our confirmation program. But I, rather than my garbling it, I'd really like to invite Chris to tell us a little bit about what he does actually do.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's great to be on. Always good to be with you, bro. The main thing I do is travel around the country, around the world, and do renewal events where we call people to a relationship with Jesus Christ, just the heart of what Catholicism is all about, and produce media. I have a TV show, a reality show. We're working on season two. Just got back from Haiti last...
Wow.
I was there last week. Can't think straight.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Filming an episode, it was pretty mind-blowing. But all the stuff we do, from the events to the media, really focus on the heart of the Catholic faith and Catholic life, living out a relationship with Jesus Christ and how that makes everyday life better.
Right, beautiful. Well, if you'll permit us, and if you're generous with your time, and a few snippets of occasions when you're actually back in Denver, we'll have you back on to talk about the renewal ministries. But today, if you don't mind, I'd like to focus on, I know, something which we both are passionate about, and that's J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And I know that you know and love the work, as indeed do I, so I think we should be able to wax lyrical and hopefully eloquent over the next few minutes. But what I'm particularly interested in, because your ministry is family, what does the Lord of the Rings give us by way of helping us as Christian families in the modern world?
I think there's certain myths and stories and things that children are brought into that convey themes of the gospel message, the themes of Christianity. I almost said better than the gospels do, but no, I won't
careful,
say that.
Careful.
But in many ways, it helps us to better appreciate what's in the gospels. You know, it's kind of like the saints. The saints obviously don't show us how to live in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, how to live in the life of grace better than Jesus' life shows us.
Right.
And yet, God knows we need the saints.
Yes.
He didn't say, well, Jesus has everything you need, so therefore, just look at him. Don't look at St. Francis. Don't look at Mother Teresa. You know, it's kind of like when the grace of God hits a person's life, hits a saint's life. It's like light shining into a diamond. You know, it just scatters it, and I could find a ray that I could latch onto, and I find beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful image, and it really is. That for some people, you know, they've closed their mind and their heart to the gospel for whatever reason, and for some people, myths, stories such as the Lord of the Rings can be more accessible, and if you like, can be a means by which they're returned to the gospel.
Right.
I know that I give lots of talk on the Lord of the Rings, and I know the power of it. So, in what way, for instance, do you think what messages, what Christian rays of light emerge, if you like, from that diamond which we call the Lord of the Rings, to use your metaphor?
I think the one that touches me personally the most is the little people, in which we all really are.
Right.
We all have this sense of like we're this smallness in our little corner of the universe, in our little spot in time, and how we push back the darkness.
Yeah.
You know, the I think the secret sauce of salvation history is the most boring part of the Bible. It's the genealogies. Most often overlooked.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's just really a big list of hobbits.
Right.
Who are these nameless small people, right?
Right.
But if it weren't for that, you know, great-grandpa of St. Joseph, Joseph would not have been St. Joseph.
Right, yeah.
And there's a reason that pops up throughout Scripture, and it's the same reason the hobbits push back the darkness.
So in some sense, yeah, the hobbits as being indicative of just ordinary, not the great, but the small.
Yeah.
And maybe the exaltation of the humble, you know, the first shall be last and the last shall be first.
Yeah, that's a beautiful theme.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I love how it's even hard to pinpoint a particular hero in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in many ways it shows me the church itself.
Right, but not in the modern sense of there is no hero, but there are various people who in various ways show heroic qualities, right?
The fellowship is the hero.
Yeah, exactly. The actual love, the bond themselves between them. Yeah, so...
The church on earth, it's the body. It's the fellowship. That pushes back the darkness. We all have a role to play.
Let me ask you to make it a little bit subjective here. If you were forced into a corner... And you couldn't get away, and that's what I'm doing now, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is your favorite character in The Lord of the Rings, and why?
It's definitely Sam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Instant answer. I like the instant answer. Why?
Yeah. I think what we were just talking about, that smallness and that humility. I mean, he just embodies that so perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, that scene where he's about to go carry on the ring after Shelob takes Frodo down. Oh man, it brings me to tears. I remember reading the book and I was just crying reading that. You know, that he what he found within himself.
Yeah,
and he didn't get that from, you know, again, what we'd think of as you know, as a young man growing up, you look up to heroes, the guy bearing the sword, you know, but here's someone who just developed through a life of quiet service.
Yes.
The interior strength, the fortitude to do something so heroic,
right,
as to be willing to carry on that journey,
to die. Yeah,
but he did it through those little sacrifices that would be unseen.
Yeah,
and all that. Not by training in some warrior camp.
If you like, with the little deaths, with the little sacrifices, you know, the little small ones that are unnoticed over a long period of time, that growth in humility and the heroism, the unsung and the understated heroism of the humble.
It's that quiet heroism that pushes back the darkness.
Well, I'm glad you were so firm and instantaneous.
Who's yours?
That's exactly. See, that was the curveball I was hoping wasn't going to get, because I never know how to answer that. I do actually. I often answer Treebeard, which is an unusual answer, and largely because of the way that the Treebeard.
That's a fascinating answer.
Well, because he embodies a lot of Tolkien's understanding of tradition, in the Ents in general, in terms of linguistics, the development of language, but also in terms of ecclesiology. I mean, the understanding of the church. You know, that Tolkien said once. Some of the madness going on in the 1970s in the church.
Yeah.
He said, I can't understand the madness. It would have been the 60s, actually, he was saying this. I can't understand the madness of those who believe that we have to get back to the purity of the so-called purity of the early church. He said, because why is a sapling considered superior to the full-grown tree?
Wow.
And he said, even if the sapling were superior to the full-grown tree, if you chop down the tree looking for the sapling, you don't find the sapling, you kill the tree. I mean, profound ecclesiology using the metaphor of a tree. And I think a lot of that goes into who the Ents are. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
That's incredible. I'm sorry. speaking of Ents, on a maybe a more shallow note, the memories from the movies are mixing memories of the books in my head, which I don't like, in many ways. But there was one thing the movie got better than my imagination, and it was the appearance of the Ents.
Oh, you loved it in the movie.
I just had a hard time envisioning Ents in my mind.
Okay.
But
we have to agree to differ, because I actually thought that the depiction of the Ents by Peter Jackson was one of the weaknesses.
Well,
they were almost reduced to comic relief, which is they have a gravitas that transcends levitas in the book, and it was just levitas, I think, largely in the movies. But maybe you're right, and I'm wrong.
I had a hard time going. Well, it's all relative. Yeah. So I'm kidding.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just had a hard time even envisioning him. But that's another great thing that it how it prepares, I think of kids for the Christian life, for contemplation.
Right.
Things like that that draw out our power of imagination.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done a lot of youth ministry, and it's amazing. One of the obstacles we run into now that kids are so inundated with smartphones, you know, you try to draw them to things like Lectio Divina.
Right.
And you say, no, imagine you're there. You know, I had kids say, I don't know what is imagining me. Like, how do you imagine things?
Yeah. You know, and the scary thing about that, of course, is you know, the imagination is the very means by which we actually picture anything, right?
Right.
So if you have a stultified imagination, you can't even see the cosmos.
Yeah.
And therefore, you don't understand your place within it, and that can only lead to a very frustrating existence. It's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy.
It is. Yeah. I mean, you have to have an imagination to appreciate the myth that is Christianity.
Right.
It's the only true myth.
Right, exactly, you as know, Tolkien would say, yeah.
Right, but your mind has to be able to wrap itself around, your heart, your emotions have to be able to engage with myth.
Yeah, to make connections. And your imagination needs to make those connections. If you can't make the connections, you literally go nowhere. So,
things like Lord of the Rings help train up imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually gave a talk yesterday at Colorado Springs to a group of people, and I actually heard today from the organizer of that I gave a talk on the Catholicism of Lord of the Rings, and this person said that some teenagers that were there have requested for their that becomes part of their RE.
Really?
It becomes part of their RE curriculum for next year. That's how... Wow. So now, maybe just one final question on Lord of the Rings. The first shall be last and the last shall be first. I didn't read the Lord of the Rings until I was an adult.
Yeah.
Most people, I think, read it when they're younger. When did you first read the Lord of the Rings?
I was in my 20s.
Oh, same. I was about 25. What about you?
Yeah, I about that. Hey! Silmarillion I'm working through now, though.
Oh, you are? Yeah. Okay. What are you making of that?
Oh, man. The creation narrative of the Silmarillion is one of the most beautiful things I've ever read in my life.
Oh, well, I'm glad you agree, because to me, I mean, it is basically a retelling of Genesis, right? But just done in such an imaginative form, the fall of Satan, and the language that Tolkien uses is... it parallels the book of Isaiah, for the fall of Lucifer. It's just,
The image that, of how Lucifer, in what would Melkor, he starts doing his own song, dissonant notes.
Exactly.
And the genius, how he described it, is how the creator, Iluvatar, he doesn't feel the need to destroy that song, but he's so powerful that he just broadens his song to include those notes.
Exactly.
And then Melkor tries to make more dissonant notes, but he makes his song even bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the power of God.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that doesn't give you an insight into all salvation history.
Precisely. There's no darkness that Satan can weave into the fabric of salvation history that God's not going to weave into something more beautiful.
Isn't that incredible?
It's absolutely astonishing. And that's some of the deep theology in the Silmarillion.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we talked about the Lord of the Rings, but those people that have read The Lord of the Rings and haven't yet read The Silmarillion, if you're older than 16, maybe not if you're younger, you do need to read The Silmarillion. Christoph Anik, always a pleasure.
Yeah,
always a pleasure to spend time with you. God bless, man.
Thanks
once again for listening to this episode of the Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute. I'm your host, Joseph Pierce. God bless and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.